From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of November 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Look at the cash grain segment with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Hear about the weather forecast from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And discuss Friday's U.S. EPA rulemaking announcement with Jonathan Kappas. He's a new faculty member here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, and we'll do it all during the Closing Market Report for a Monday afternoon. You can find us online at willag.org. We're a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Let's check in on the numbers from the CME Group in Chicago for this Monday afternoon. Futures finished the day lower in the wheat and the corn pits. Beans were mixed on the afternoon. The soft red winter wheat in the December contract at 642 and a quarter was down 2 and a quarter at the end of the day. The March at 652 and a half, 2 lower. And July soft red at 652 and three quarters, down 3. The hard red July at 688, down 2 and three quarters. December corn a dime lower at $4.12. The March at 421, 9 and a half lower. And the May at 429 and a quarter, down 9 and a quarter. July corn, 436 and three quarters, down 9 cents. September at 443, that finished down 8 and three quarters. And December next year at 451 and a quarter, down 8 and a half cents on this Friday afternoon. January beans at $12.87 and a half, up 7 for the day. The March at 1273 and a quarter, 7 and a half cents higher. In the May at 1259 and one half cents, up 9 and a quarter. July soybeans at 1255, a dime higher. And the November beans of next year at $11.51 and a quarter, down 2 and one quarter cents. Bean meal up $5.30 at $4.1580. Bean oil at $40.11. That's down 36 cents. Live cattle futures in the December at $131.90, down $1.50. The February at $133.20, down $1.60. Feeder cattle finished the November at 164.85, 30 cents lower, and the January futures at 164.30, down $1.52 and a half, and lean hogs, $85.60, finished 30 cents lower for 100 pounds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. December crude oil at $92.96 a barrel, down 88 cents. The RBOB gasoline, or wholesale price, at $2.65.07, just about unchanged. Ethanol futures of $1.80.5. That's $1.80.5, up 2 and 8 tenths of a cent. The difference between the two, 85 and 2 tenths of a cent. That's 2 and 8 tenths of a cent narrower than it was on Friday afternoon. Natural gas at $3.61.7, up 4 and 3 tenths. And diesel fuel at $2.92.1, a penny and 7 tenths lower. Gold futures finished $1,272.30 an ounce, down $15.10, and the U.S. dollar at 80.77. That's up 0.07 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. 49 degrees outside our studios now. We're supposed to get to a high of 58 with sunny skies this afternoon. West-northwest winds at 14 to 18 miles an hour, gusting to 28. And then tonight, clear with a low of 28. West-northwest winds at 6 to 11. They'll become light and variable after midnight, and sunny skies on Tuesday with a high near 47 degrees. Calm winds by then out of the south at southeast to 5 to 8 miles an hour, and partly cloudy on Tuesday evening with a low of just 31 degrees. Wednesday partly sunny and 50 degrees. Wednesday night a 50% chance of showers, cloudy at a low of 41. And on Thursday, a 40% chance of rainfall, cloudy with a high of 48 degrees. Thursday evening, a chance of rain, cloudy and 40. And Friday, rainfall, cloudy, and a high of 46 degrees.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by Justin Wood, Paul Stevens, Tim Smith, Scott Harms, and Mark Soderberg of Archer Financial Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm. You can learn more about the services they offer at 800-637-3123.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. It is the 18th day of November. On the phone line with us, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
First things first, I suppose you and I both have our hearts going out to all those folks in Gifford and Washington and many other places across Illinois and the Midwest that suffered severe damage from tornadoes and high winds over the weekend.
Most definitely, and we're quite blessed here in Bloomington. We just had some minor damage, but there was quite a few listeners out there, Todd, that suffered some pretty good damage out in the countryside. I know the media covers the towns, but there's quite a few farmsteads that got hit fairly hard.
And I heard, but I haven't identified just where that a leg went down here, probably in Champaign County. I'm not quite certain where that was. It may have been in an elevator. We're hopeful that nobody was hurt in any of those prospects. I know there were some fatalities in this process, and it's always a dangerous thing when tornadic weather makes its way across the Midwest, and it's a good reason to have your alerts on and the radio on and trying to stay up to speed with where those really terrible tornadoes might land. Let's turn your attention to the marketplace, Kurt, and because there are things that have been happening in Washington, D.C., the RFS proposal, which U.S. EPA floated a few weeks ago, was released as the proposal on Friday afternoon, and the marketplace took it in stride then, but managed to take a few more pennies out of the market today.
Yeah, corn's had a tough road in through here. You know, the positive part was, you know, a little aggressive export pace to Asia, but with the WASDE USDA coming out and showing up, ample supply of bushels, a little bit bigger production, and the ongoing renewable fuel concern, even though this proposal, you know, going through here and through here, is going, definitely probably going to be a negative factor as far as putting the ethanol blend intact in through here. It's probably more of a longer-term concern in our mind, but it's just the fact that with the news we've seen, it just kind of limited the buying interest. And to add more negative news midday, talk of China possibly finding some GMO unauthorized in a load of corn, and they've been the big buyers here, and that just turned everybody negative as we pushed the fundamental picture negative. The market went lower and was able to get below the previous lows, and this triggered some technical selling as the corn market made new lows here as we went into about midday there, Todd.
We were a little, I think some folks were kind of hopeful that we might have a bounce. Guess that is not going to come to fruition, at least not at the moment, anytime soon.
Well, we got everybody good and bearish now that we hopeful that we see some type of short covering bounce. The thing we're kind of looking forward here, the function of the market is to go lower and seek out some demand. That could happen. Then plus, two, we have the option expiration here on Friday for the December options, but particularly corn. And that could set the stage that maybe some of these traders, hedgers, can get everything squared away here, and we can see a little relief in the selling pressure occur on that. But it's going to take some time. The market's fairly well damaged. The next key support on the lead chart is going to be this $4 level basis December futures contract.
Turn your attention to the soybeans. What happened there?
Just continued optimism from the standpoint that you know, demand's still fairly decent. On the export inspections report, showed we shipped out over 87 million bushels of corn versus 87 million bushels of beans versus 30 million of corn and about 18 million bushels of wheat. So we're seeing a continued aggressive export pace for the beans here. We're having the front end sort of hold together here over time with continued ideas that the southern hemisphere sees favorable weather. It's going to be awful hard to get something going as the world shifts their demand to the southern hemisphere. But beans, like the corn, particularly the soybean oil, has been hit real hard with the trans fat news and also the renewable fuels news coming out, Todd.
Anything for the livestock producer on the afternoon?
Well, the cattle market held in there until about midday. We saw lower cutout values and didn't see any real aggressive cash trade, so that sent some profit taking into the trade. Hog-wise, we saw some articles in the Wall Street Journal about ample pork production. A lot of talk of some of these carcass weights over 280 pounds where, you know, these hogs are getting up to almost small steer weight.
That's right. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Take care, Todd.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and joins us here on the closing market report for this Monday afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Now up next, U.S. EPA Friday proposed changes to the nation's renewable energy supply. The cuts to volumes of renewable energy mandated by Congress may also be outside the authority of the agency. I'll have more in a moment with Jonathan Kappas from the University of Illinois.
So basically what the EPA has floated at this point,
right,
is that Congress, you told us that we could adjust if the availability of a product was limited.
Right.
We're going to use limited in this case by the blend wall for the availability.
Right.
Secondary question before we get to that one.
Yeah.
Who sets the blend wall? It's not written. There's no mandate for corn-based ethanol. Where did it come from?
And that's one of the points I make, because that's the tough part about using the blend wall on this. So if you look at the industry estimates of what the production capacity is and what the estimates are for producing renewable fuel, including corn-based ethanol, the capacity's there. And it's not that the renewable fuels industry sets the blend wall or if there's any, it's just a part of the fact that we only blend 10%. So on one hand, it's completely out of the control of the renewable fuels industry because they have no control over how much gasoline is consumed in this country. And there's this problem of the E10 blend being the predominant usage. A few years back, they sought a waiver to get the E15, and we've not seen much movement in that direction as far as getting E15 out in the supply. And then you've got E85. So you've got the potential, you've got vehicles on the road that can use E85. But we have not seen the buildup in the infrastructure. So the gas stations that'll sell E85, the pipelines, the blending facilities, kind of that whole range of things you need. And all of that's outside of the renewable fuels industry's capabilities, right? They're producing the fuel. They don't necessarily have any control over how many E85 vehicles are sold, how many pumps there are, and how many gas stations there are to go out and purchase E85. And then, of course, how much is even purchased. So if you step back and think, well, Congress created the RFS because they wanted to push for this industry. They wanted to see an increasing amount of renewable fuels in the gasoline supply. The blend wall was not a part of that statute. There's no authority to look at the blend wall, and that's no direct explicit authority to look at the blend wall to do a reduction. And part of that is Congress was pushing. They wanted the industry to grow, and they wanted more and more gasoline to come more ethanol into the gasoline supply. But the blend wall is a reality. If you're at 10% and you're 13, the most you can get is 13.4 into the supply, you know, the industry is saying, what do we do with the rest of this? Now you've got, certainly there are other aspects of this, the renewable identification number, the ability to buy essentially credits or, and trade those. We've seen a lot of interesting movement in that market to trade those. So it's not as if we're completely, you know, it may not be a concrete wall, the blend wall, if you will. There's a little bit more to it. But, you know, stepping back to this issue of what EPA is deciding to do, you know, you can pretty much bet that if this leaked document becomes the final proposal and becomes the final rule, there's going to be legal challenges to it. And at what point then is a court begin, as the court begins to look at this, they're going to have to, in essence, define, you know, what this inadequate domestic supply, that's the phrase that Congress used. And does that mean something completely outside the control of the industry can now limit this production pushing mechanism that Congress put in place? And I find it to be a very interesting question.
It would be surprising to me that a limit that nobody really knows who put in place,
right,
Congress and or the courts, would allow to stand.
Yeah, the court, you've got to, because
the limit's not really set by anybody in particular. You,
right.
Right?
No, the blend wall, I mean, to the extent.
It's set by, in this case, it's been set by the car manufacturers as much as anything, because some cars can run E10.
Yeah.
All cars can run E10. Some cars can run E15. Some cars can run E85. So can an industry drive this particular part of the economy?
And certainly the renewable fuels industry, I think it's fair and safe to say they're very frustrated with that aspect, right? Because
they helped set the E10 to begin with.
So that's where we got started, but they've been pushing for higher blends and they've been pushing to get more and more E85. And, you know, you've run into the struggles with the manufacturing, what vehicles and with all due respect to the manufacturers, I mean, they have concerns. If you put the wrong kind of fuel in your car, you're not going after the fuel supply. You're going after the automaker because your car's not working right or something happened. So they're worried about the liability they carry into a higher blend. But there's been a push to get E85 out there. There's been a lot of issues with the facilities, with being able to get pumps on the ground and gas stations available broadly enough that these E85 vehicles can find the fuel if they want it. So from the renewable fuels industry perspective, certainly there's frustrations with that aspect of the blend wall. And then at the end of the day, nobody necessarily has control over how much gasoline we consume as a country. On one hand, it's a good thing if we're concerned about the various issues around gasoline consumption. We've been reducing it a little bit. And that wasn't necessarily contemplated going into the RFS.
Yes, because the CAFE standards were raised.
You've got more efficient vehicles and a lot more of those vehicles on the road. The high gas prices that we've seen in the last few years, there's been consumer behavior has shifted a bit to look for more fuel efficient vehicles and thus consume less gasoline, which then plays back into the RFS and the blend wall. So the tough thing about the blend wall is exactly that. There's not a necessarily one actor or set of actors you can point to say, you've got to fix this so that we can fix the blend wall, because there's a multitude of issues. That being said, certainly having the fuel available and the potential for E15 and these little bit higher blends, those would make a difference. That certainly would push the blend wall out, or certainly would address some of that near-term issue, even with lower gasoline consumption. So, you know, going back to how the court would look at this, one of the things I found very interesting in a case that was decided recently when the American Petroleum Institute sued EPA over the cellulosic level, the court sort of went out of its way to make this point that it called it asymmetrical. And it was certainly, to them, they were saying it's unfair to the oil industry, the gasoline blending industry, to force them to buy a product, say, at this point, cellulosic ethanol. It's not available. So the mandate's not working for them because you're telling them to buy cellulosic ethanol, but it's not there. And so that's not going to force technology because there's no way to get it there. Well, this is sort of a corollary almost to that, where you're going to use the blend wall, which is outside the control of the renewable fuels industry, to now limit the renewable fuels industry's market, and they're, you know, you're now basically using that against them. Which the point I made in the post yesterday was that's a asymmetrical issue as well, and will the courts look at that when they make this decision? Because now all of a sudden, where Congress was pushing these guys, and you had a lot of build out since the last RFS, a lot of increased production of renewable fuels, and that was the goal. the burden now of this blend wall is falling exclusively on that industry, and that was the industry Congress was trying to expand. So it becomes a very interesting, I think, a very interesting question for a court is whether EPA is being too creative and getting outside of what Congress gave them the authority to do. And then what does that mean? And how does that reshape this issue? Because the blend wall is going to still be there. And finding solutions to the blend wall still, I think, probably has to be the long-term goal, because that's going to keep coming up one way or the other. But it was a very fascinating issue, and one I know that's been on the minds of a lot of folks that I've talked to, and it has big implications. You know, I was just talking about this with one of the fellow members of the faculty yesterday. If you take almost a billion and a half gallons out of the ethanol market because you've lowered that mandate, that now is going to impact the price of corn. And then once you impact the price of corn, you have a whole lot of issues that come as a result of that. Everything from, you know, land rents to the Title I subsidy battle that's going on in the Farm Bill. Because now all of a sudden the price of corn is lower. Those programs, the estimates of the cost of those programs will change drastically, particularly if you set in a floor price for corn. And now all of a sudden you've taken 1.5 billion gallons out. Now you got a lot of leftover corn. We've got more corn than the market's demanding. Your price is coming down. And once you put a floor price in there, the payments begin to go pretty quickly for that. And at 95, 96, 97 million acres of corn in this country, you know, every little bit of change there is going to have a big impact on the way the program spends, on how much that program spends. It's going to have an impact on the insurance programs. So, you know, we kind of get into this, and there's a great battle going on between the industries and the oil industry and the renewable fuels industry. But it isn't just that. I mean, it becomes a big issue well outside of just the ethanol and the gasoline folks. And so you step back and start thinking about how this might all play in. It is something to watch. It's going to be something to watch in the coming months.
Jonathan Kappas is an agricultural policy expert from the University of Illinois. You can see more from him online at our website at willag.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Farm Doc Project at the University of Illinois, holding a series of 5 Illinois Farm Economic Summit meetings December 16th through 20th to discuss and analyze the most pressing economic issues facing Illinois producers. Registration and details at farmdoc.illinois.edu.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming. And if you can't hit the website at Willag, can't hear us on one of our radio stations, just dial in at this number, 217-333-3434. Again, that number, 217-333-3434. We update it daily, twice, in fact, with the opening numbers and some analysis, and the closing numbers and some analysis at about 10:15 and 3:15 each and every business day of the year.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
It's a Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to check the cash grain market. On the phone line with us from the Andersons right here in Champaign County is Greg Johnson. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, are producers moving at all in the field? Is everybody up and done or not?
Oh, there's still a few left. Not very many. There's a few fields that you can see every once in a while, but I would say we're 98-99% done, maybe 99.5.
What did the Andersons, a company that produces ethanol, think of the RFS decision on Friday, at least the rulemaking that U.S. EPA has released?
Well, I think they're in the camp that, you know, the mandate is just that, a mandate. We can certainly use more corn for ethanol if the margins are there. And so far, at least early on, the profit margins are there. So, you know, at this point, it looks like we'll use more ethanol than what's been mandated. But that's a supply and demand thing that's in constant flux, I suppose.
Now, are your thoughts when you look forward to both the price of, well, I guess, to all the price of the crude oil, the price of corn, that we might continue to use ethanol at a quicker pace than the mandate, even the 13 billion gallon mandate?
Yes, but you know, it's the margins are certainly better in the short run than farther out. So you know, and that can change, obviously. So you know, that remains to be seen. But at least we're going to get off to a good start. And if we could keep that pace up, then we certainly could do better than the 13 billion.
And what are your bids for the day?
All right, cash corn is 405. January 408 and next fall 426. Cash beans are 1287. January also 1287. Next fall 1126. And next year's wheat is 628.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson at the Andersons joining us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The weather in just a few moments.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Drew Lerner left us a forecast for the upcoming week.
The rainfall that came with yesterday's severe weather and also on Saturday across the Midwest was rather impressive in some areas in itself, with some rain totals getting upwards over 3 inches in northern Kentucky and 1 to 3 inches across southern Indiana and some of the immediate neighboring areas. The precipitation will certainly set back field work in some of those areas, although the majority of harvesting has been completed in quite a few areas. We do still have some field work that's left to be done, and if the farmers are located where these heavier rains are, certainly the amount of precipitation that has occurred will keep field work to a minimum for a little while this week. We do expect another storm system to impact the Midwest as we move into mid to late week. On Wednesday, we'll see some showers occurring from portions of Missouri into parts of Wisconsin and maybe western Michigan, but they'll be erratic and mostly light. Until then, dry weather should prevail. We'll see lighter winds across the region as well. Temperatures will be seasonable, a lot of 40s and 50s for highs expected over these few days. Today will be a little bit colder in the north with a few 30s and 40s up that way. As we get into Thursday and Friday of this week, there's a fairly good chance we'll see the precipitation that I just mentioned from Missouri to Wisconsin and parts of Michigan to increase as it shifts to the east. Thursday and Friday, we'll see the greatest amount of precipitation in the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest, while the northwestern areas only see light amounts of precipitation. The moisture is going to set back field work once again. That is that time of the year, so it's hard to get it to be dry for an extended period of time as the jet stream continues to be rather active. As we move on out into the weekend and next week, we'll also see some additional precipitation events coming and going. The moisture totals that are expected to come Thursday and Friday will probably run from a couple tenths of an inch upwards to 8/10 of an inch. And the precipitation will be focused on some of the areas from the Delta and a small part of the southeastern U.S. plains into the eastern Midwest. That would include parts of Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, and Kentucky, as well as southern Illinois. As we go on out later this week and into the weekend, we'll likely see drier weather evolve for a temporary period. But two storm systems are possible to come out of the southern plains and move across the lower eastern Midwest again, as well as the Delta and southeastern states as we go into next week. The two storm systems are up for debate as to exactly how significant they will be and what path they'll take, but we'll continue to watch both of them. We might end up with a snow event on our hands before we're done with the month of November. The temperatures later this week will turn temporarily warmer late Wednesday into Thursday and then cool off quite a bit over the weekend as a strong amount of cold air comes down from Canada. Highs may be limited to the 20s and 30s for a couple of days with lows in the teens and 20s. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Our thanks go to Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated for his forecast. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Please do visit our website at willag.org. And that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. Have a good afternoon.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Farm Doc Project at the University of Illinois, holding a series of five Illinois Farm Economic Summit meetings December 16th through 20th to discuss and analyze the most pressing economic issues facing Illinois producers. Registration and details at farmdoc.illinois.edu.